Good morning. Today we're going to begin the topic of heteriska. It is a topic which is increasingly relevant to most people. With the prevalence today of Jewish banks and mortgage brokers and Jewish businesses, more and more people end up, one way or another, being part of a heteriska. The most important halacha and the least understood halacha in heteriska is probably the fact that when you write a heteriska, you have to understand what you're doing. And in Mirtz Hashem, we'll spend the next few weeks. I mean, today is going to be mostly the general background information and to understand what the basis is. And from that, once we have an understanding of the fundamentals, we will then be able to understand some of the different issues and controversies there are about applying a heteriska today. Now, the first question that comes up with a heteriska is it appropriate to write a heteriska? The Torah came along and created an Isser Ribbis, and a heteriska seems to be some way to circumvent an Isser to get around it. Is this the appropriate thing to do? Now, what's interesting is, if you go through Rezeo Neshech, if you learn through the Sugyas of Hilchos Ribbis, there are very few kulas. And in fact, throughout the Gemara, there is gzeira after gzeira after gzeira in different takanos. There's avak ribbis, there's ribbis mucheres, mekachu memkar, haramas ribbis. Chazal went very far out of their way to plug up all the holes and to make sure that there's nothing even similar to interest that people can do. As the Torah explains, because ribbis is something which is so tempting, there's such a big Yetzirah, Chazal felt the need to make a tremendous amount of gezeiros to prevent people from coming to Ribbis D'Oraisa. Yet, in spite of the fact that there are so many chumras in the Gemara, already from the times of the Rishonim, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, we find different suggestions. They're not the heteriska that we have today, but different suggestions or different types, ways to structure a deal which is similar to a halva beribis. Obviously, it's not a halva beribis, but even from the times of Rishayim, we see they went ahead to look for etzas, how a person could essentially be malva beribis. The Rishayim speak out that it was because it was certainly a shasadchak. Historically, Jews were very limited to what kind of professions they could engage in. The two professions that they were allowed were money lending and owning bars, selling liquor. These are both things that frum goyim could not do. They have their religious, restrictions, and therefore these were two very common industries. But interesting is both of them end up forcing you into a certain type of haram. The money lending business has a heteriska. The Jews that owned bars and sold liquor, the heter that we have of mechiras chametz comes from the fact that if you owned a bar and all of your schnapps before chametz, before Pesach, it was chametz that you had to get rid of it. And the harama, if you will, of selling the chametz also comes from the fact that this is a very common profession.
Why would there be a need to create a framework for ribbis? Just
deal with goyim. So apparently it wasn't so simple. Apparently, once they're lending, then they need to deal with Jews as well. There's probably a need on the other side as well. If they needed capital, and the goyim didn't have any banks because they couldn't be in the banking industry, your only choice was to turn to a Jew. So whatever the economic reasons were, in the Rishonim they speak out, there was a tremendous tzorich. Now, besides the fact that there was a tremendous tzorich for it, there's a fascinating Torah Tamimah. It's a little bit of you have to be very careful with the svara. But the Torah Tamimah says that one of the reasons of ribbis, of the Isser, is v'chei achicha imach. There's a chiyuv v'chei, and there's a chiyuv to give an interest-free loan. Zag the Torah Tamimah, when Klal Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael, they were farmers, they had regular jobs. So then if someone had a cash flow problem, he needed to buy seeds for the next crop, being malva beribbis was a siru to v'chei achicha, and the Torah answered it. Mashenkein, he says that we're in Golos, and everyone are just merchants, they're Tagarim, the only thing they have is capital to do business with. There he says, the V'chei Achicha says the other way. V'chei Achicha says that we have to work out a way to give people access to capital. And therefore, he says, Avado, just because the reason of an Isser doesn't apply, we can't chas v'shalom be over an Isser. But if we have a technical way to structure a deal that doesn't violate the Isser, so what's the problem? Al tashkafa, why are we doing something the Torah doesn't want? So he says, since this situation is different, if we have a way that doesn't technically violate the Isser, it's okay to look for a harama, to look for a way that will be mutter, since it doesn't violate the spirit or the hashkafa of the Isser as well. Now obviously this is a kind of svara, this is a decision that you need the Rishayim or the Gedolei HaPoskim to make, to go ahead and to start saying that today the hashkafa of this Isser is, you know, the Metzias has changed. It's not something that we can do today. But Al Kol Panim, it gives us a little bit of a Pesach into perhaps why the idea of the Heter Isser was created throughout the generations. Now another point to keep in mind, Chavetz Chaim, right, in Avas Chesed, in Perek Tezvav, writes very strongly that although a Heter Isser is something which is Tzalacha, it was Neskavel in Klal Yisrael, but a person can't forget that the Isser of Ribbis is based on the fact there is a mitzvah saseh of Im Kesef Talva. If a person needs money, you have the ability to lend it to him. There is a mitzvah saseh to lend it to him without asking for anything in return. So Zakta Chavetz Chaim, it's true that Klal Yisrael, people needed parnasa, people, they were in the banking industry, so for that was their parnasa, so the place created a heter iska, a way for them to engage in these kind of deals beheter. But this does not mean there's no mitzvah saseh of an interest-free loan. And therefore the Chavetz Chaim says it's important, even if you're going to be engaged in heter iskas, you're going to be engaged in these kinds of deals, you have to always make sure you also mekayim the mitzvah of Mkesef Talva. In fact, the Chavetz Chaim suggests that if you're in the banking business, if that's what you do for your parnasa, so you have your parnasa, so chayecha koydmin, so you're able to charge the interest as long as it's done boif and heter. But he says that such a person should set aside money for a gemach and make sure that he's also, at least on occasion, giving out interest-free loans, being the kind of mitzvah of Mkesef Talva. He actually writes that the reason why there's so much anius today is, he said, it used to be, so the bankers had a heter iska. Everyone else who had some money was happy to lend it out in Kesef Talva. They gave it, they were kind of the mitzvah of chesed and gave it out interest-free. So Chavetz Chaim, today, the mitzvah has changed. Today, everyone, anyone who has a couple of dollars is right away charging interest and writing heter iskas. And he says, because people don't do chesed with their money anymore, that is why there's so much anius today. And therefore, he concludes again that even if you're going to be soimach on a heter iska, you're going to write it, do not forget the chiyuv of Mkesef Talva and make sure that you have at least some portion of your money set aside to be mekayim the mitzvah of gemilas chesed and to lend out money without any interest. Now, what is a heter iska? The first thing, before we get to what a heter iska is, it's important to know what it's not. What it's not, the Igros Moshe writes, is it is not a kameya. It is not an amulet that somehow you write this, you sign this document, and now there's a heter to lend money with interest. The yesod of a heter iska is that the deal is no longer a loan. It's a partnership. It's an investment. Now, we all know, the Isser Ribbis is, if you lend someone money, you can't charge interest. On the other hand, if you have an investment with someone, you're a partner, so you'll invest X amount of dollars. If the partnership does well, you're going to earn a return. Now, that return is not Isser, because interest is when there's a loan, a partnership that generates profits. There's absolutely nothing wrong with giving that to the investor, and that's perfectly okay. Now, the kunz of a heter iska is to create a partnership, to create an investment, which, because it's an investment, you're entitled to a share of the profits, but to structure it in a way that it is secure and it is virtually guaranteed like a loan. And we're going to go through exactly how that is accomplished. Now, the first makar is, there's a Mishnah says, Ein mekablim soim baris v'mi yisrael, which means that a person has an investment. So we just said There's nothing wrong with investing money and earning a return. So we have a very nice idea. We have a, whenever you want to lend someone money and charge interest, we know there's an issur ribbis. So instead of lending it to him and charging him interest, why don't we just invest it with him? You'll become a partner. You'll get a share in the upside. But the recipient will guarantee if anything goes wrong, anything happens, the item gets stolen, destroyed, it goes down in value, he'll guarantee you won't lose money. Is that mutter? So the Mishnah says no. When you have an investment, even though you call it an investment, even though you're actually buying physical goods, but if the recipient is guaranteeing that investment, that is going to be ribbis. We ignore the fact that it's called a partnership. We ignore the fact that there's actually something being bought. The moment it's guaranteed, it can't go down in value. That is, in halacha, considered a loan. Now, there's a, not a machlokes rishonim, but there are two different ways of interpreting this gemara. Rashi understood the case was that you're making the investment. Now, if the investment does well, so the investor will get a share of the profits. If the investment doesn't do well, so then the recipient is guaranteeing the principal, but he's not guaranteeing any profit. In that case, Rashi says, that is ribbis d'rabbanan. Because you give the money, there's no downside, but there's no guaranteed upside. There may be profits, there may not be. If there are profits, they're just being generated from this actual investment. So in that case, Rashi says, it would be asur midrabbanan. In contrast, if you guarantee both the principal and the interest, if you will, you say, invest the money with me, I guarantee you, you're going to earn at least a 5% return. Now, in such a case, even though you're calling it a partnership, even though you're buying something, since the recipient is guaranteeing both the principal plus the profit payment, that would be ribbis d'oraisa. Now, these situations do occasionally come up. Usually, it's with family members. We had a case a few months ago where there was a young man learning in Kail, and his father wanted to help him out. So his father was investing; he was playing the market. He said, "Give you." He had a few. The son had a few dollars saved up. So he said, "Give me the money. I'm going to invest it for you, and I guarantee you won't lose money. If there's any loss, I'll cover it from my pocket." So is that mutter or asa? So l'chayra, this is the mission that we just had. That even though it's an investment, he's taking it, he's investing the money, he's playing the market. Since the father is guaranteeing the principal, that's asa. If he guarantees only the principal, but not the interest, not the profits, it'll be ribbis d'rabbanan. If he guarantees that you're going to earn at least a 5% return, or does he guarantee an upside, that would be ribbis d'oraisa. Now, although this is true,
is it different though between parents and child? Is there some kind of
solid exception? So there is a Gemara, the Gemara Nezer Neshach does bring down the Shittas of Yehuda, there's no issur ribbis between a father and a son. We do not pass them like that. However, the Gemara is mashma, it's only d'rabbanan. If it's clear that it's not being done al ribbis, it's being done, you know, father, son, other cheshbonos, he says it would be d'rabbanan. Well, it's a good point. We'll get back to that in a moment.
Is the father supporting him?
In this case, he's actually not. So if he's not giving it as ribbis, then what should, you know, if he's supporting him anyway, then he should just take the money and not promise him anything in exchange. Oh, so okay, so get that in a minute. It's like this. So there's Sefer HaTrumos brings down a Ravid or a Rajba. It's not clear what the Shita is exactly. But there is a Heter, which the Ramon in the beginning of Kufayin Zayin quotes, is that what's the Yisra Ribbis? The Yisra Ribbis is I borrow money and I pay a return. What happens if I take your money and I say, I'm taking this money, I'm not borrowing, I don't need it for myself. I'm going to invest it on your behalf. Every dime that I make will go straight to you. So although I'm taking the money, I have absolutely no benefit from it. The only person that benefits from the deal is the lender. Zok v'ran, that's not ribbis. Ribbis needs a halva where there's a borrower that's taking the money for himself. He's using it. So if he's using it and he wants to pay return to the lender, so that's going to be usur. That's the issur ribis. But if the borrower has absolutely no benefit whatsoever, he says that is not ribis and that would be mutter. So going back to this case, it depends what the father is doing. If the father is taking the money and he's saying, you know, we'll split the profits, but I'll guarantee the principal, or you'll get the first 8% of the profits, I'll get everything above that, then the father is a loiva. He's borrowing the money. He has a benefit. So even though most of the benefit's going to the son, this would be usur and drabon and derais, depending on what he guaranteed. Ma'ashenken, if the father takes it and says, I'm taking the money, I have absolutely no benefit from this loan. Every penny of profit will go straight to you. But I'm willing, because I want to be mahana you, I'm willing to guarantee the keren. So in there, the Ramo brings this down the halacha. There he says, there is no issur ribis. Now you do have to be careful. If there's any benefit to the borrower, this heter will not apply. But I'll call upon him in a case where there was absolutely no benefit for the father, there would be no issur. Now, the Poskim don't speak about this much, but if you look at the Ran carefully, the Ran really only says his heter by ribis drabon, which means the father guaranteed the principal, but he didn't guarantee a return. There the Ran says, since the father had no benefit, he's not a loiva, there's no problem. However, where the father guarantees the interest as well, there already it's a shayla of a doraisa, and there the Ran seems to be unsure whether this heter would apply. There's Ma'arival that says that it's mutter, there's a Pnei Moshe that says it'll be aser. It's more difficult to be samech on it. But I'll call upon him when the guarantee is only on the principal. There, if the borrower has absolutely no benefit, that would be okay. Now, this could also happen when people are, if you have people who are trying to get an investor into a fund or into a new venture, and they very much need this person's name, they want to be able to say he's involved. We've dealt with cases where there was a guarantee on the principal. And in a normal case where the borrower has a benefit as well, he's not giving all the profits to the lender, this would be a problem. Now, what we see from this halacha is that even when it's an investment, it's still the issur ribis will, if there's any guarantee, the issur ribis will still apply. An investment is only mutter when it really is at risk. So the question is, how much risk does the lender or does the investor have to be exposed to for it to be mutter? Now, to understand the answer to this question, and to really understand how a heter iska works, we first have to learn through some of the basic halachas of iska. And this is the slugim of Daf Kavdal Rama Beis that we learned through this morning. The Gemara over there is not talking about Hilchos Ribbis. It has nothing to do with Yerodeya. Over there, the Gemara is talking about Choshen and Mishpat Shaila. What happens if two people go into business together? One of them provides the capital. The other one does the work. So, as what happens more often than you might imagine, someone has a great idea. They're going to business. He goes to someone. He gets funding. Okay, we're partners. But no one bothers discussing what the terms are. So, what happens? What is the default arrangement of a partnership? So what the Gemara says is that when you make a partnership, one person provides the capital, the other person does the work, there the default is everything gets split 50-50. If there are profits, half go to the investor, half go to the manager. The same is if there are losses. The manager will have to take, even though the capital all came from the investor, if the money is all wiped out, the manager is going to be personally responsible for half of the money. Now the Gemara explains that in Lomdus, the reason why we split it 50-50 is we take this investment and we break it into two components. We say half of this investment was a personal loan to the manager. If it's a personal loan to the manager, then I don't care what happens to the business. The business can go bankrupt. If you borrow money, you have to pay it back. So the reason why the manager is responsible for half the losses is because half the money that he took is like a personal loan to him that he's responsible to pay no matter what. Now, the same way half of the money is a personal loan, so he's responsible to pay no matter what, if there are profits that are generated, So the portion of the business, the chelik hamilvah, that he borrowed the money and he used for the business, all the profits that are generated from this money, it's his money that he borrowed, he gets the profits. So that's why he gets half, the manager will, on the chelik hamilvah, on the half of the money that we look at as if it's a personal loan, he gets all the profits and he's responsible for all the losses. We'll get that in a minute. Good question. So half of this investment is a chatzi milva. It's a loan to the manager, and that part the manager gets all the profits. He gets all the losses. The other half of it we say is a pikadon. There we say it's an investment. It belongs to the investor. Because it belongs to the investor, this half, whatever it appreciates, flows back to the investor. If it depreciates in value, if it gets lost, that loss is the investor's loss. This is his asset. So therefore, because we look at it as a chatzi milva chatzi pikadon, we look at this investment that half is a loan to the manager, half is a pikadon, therefore they split all the profits 50-50. And this is the halacha of a stam iska. Management fee. Okay, wait, we'll get that in a minute. We'll get that in a minute. So the standard chayshu bishbon arrangement is half loan, half pikadon, and that's how we split it. Now there is a discussion among the Rishonim and among later poskim whether it's really a chatzi milva chatzi pikadon. What happens when you get hilchos shmita? What happens for a bechor? Do you get pishnayim on a pikadon? You do get pishnayim on a havo. You do not get pishnayim. There is a machlokes, there's a Mordechai that says it is a true loan. The half loan is considered a loan for all halachic purposes. A pikadon is a regular pikadon for all halachic purposes. Others argue. Others say the Chazal looked at it as a loan just to get to the 50-50 profit and loss sharing. But it's not a real loan. Again, that's a tumult in the Achronim. But the bottom line is, every time there's an Isko, one person provides the capital, we look at it as a Chatzim of a Chatzim Pikadim. Now, this is very nice in Chesh Mishpah. But the problem is in Hilchos Ribbis. The Mishnah on Daf Samaches, which we have in the Maamar Makomis as well, says this arrangement is a problem. Why? Because when you give an iska to someone, so you gave him $100,000, $50,000 is an interest-free loan, and you're not getting anything in exchange. The other $50,000 is a pikadon, which the recipient is managing the business on your behalf. You get all the profits, you get all the losses. The problem is, why is he managing this business for you? He's not receiving a penny of payment. He's taking a pikadon. Now, if you have $50,000 and you go over to someone and say, you know, do me a favor, please invest this in real estate for me, I'll get all the profits and all the losses. Is he going to do that? Obviously not. You have to pay him for his work. He's doing the investment, he's buying, he's selling, he's managing. He wants to get paid. So over here, the Mishnah says, if you give someone an iska, and half of it is an interest-free loan, half is a pikadon, and he manages it for you, he's managing your pikadon, your investment for free. And that is a problem. Therefore, Zuck the Mishnah, you have to pay him to manage this investment. Now, how much you pay him is a long sugya. That's what the Gemara that we went through this morning. What comes out is that if you don't negotiate, and at the end of the day you want to pay him for his work, there's a tremendous machlokes. Rishonim had to understand how much you pay kapoy batzel. There are many different halachas. However, if before you do the deal, you make up with him, I'm going to pay. You're going to negotiate how much you pay him. There, the halacha is you can pay him even a dinner, even a davar mu'ad, a small token amount, as long as he's getting paid something for his work, that is okay. The way the Achronim explain it is that since this is a ribbis d'rabbanon, and since anyway he's buying or selling this investment because of the chelik hamilva. So he's not really doing much extra work for your half, so therefore a token amount is enough. But he has to be paid some token amount for his work. If anyone has ever done a heteriska and there's a dollar that gets paid, this is the pshat in the dollar. The investor, the lender, is paying the borrower or the manager to manage this iska for him. And since it's done at the time that they negotiate, the time they make the payment, a dollar is enough.
Loan that gets no interest is permitted to do, or managing the investment without being paid
It's like this. Managing the loan is fine because the borrower gets all the profits to the chelek halvah. That's not the issue. The issue is you're managing the pikadon for the investor for free, and the reason why you're doing it is because he's giving you a chelek halvah, he's giving you an interest-free loan on the side. The only reason why you're accepting to manage the pikadon is because he's giving you the milvah. So that is where the ribbis is. And once, as long as you make up to pay him your moist of dinner, that itself would be okay because of gilulotari, it's an issur ribbis rabban. But the issue is working for free, managing the investment without getting any payment.
Is it because it's business portion, not loan portion, he is giving the person's investing is giving back because he wants the other part too?
Exactly. The reason why the recipient is doing this work, he's managing this investment, is only for one reason. He's only doing it because he's getting an interest-free loan on the side where he gets the profit from it. It's more than a thank you. You're actually doing work. Since you're doing work, there has to be some payment for your services. Now, again, clearly the value of the services are worth more than a dollar, but because it's ribbis d'rabbanan, and again, some of the achrayim said gvilutari, you're working anyway, there they were makel with a davar mu'ud as long as it was negotiated in advance. It's machlokes rishonim. We pass him, he is a shem esachar. Look at his Rambam and Rav. So this is a regular iska. If you have a regular investment, no one's guaranteeing any money, no one's guaranteeing any return. Your real partners, 50% to the upside, 50% on the downside, you have to pay the person at least a davar mu'ud for his work. In a case where one person provides the capital and they're exactly 50-50 partners, if you don't pay him for the work, there's going to be a problem with ribbis. You have to make up in advance, I'm giving you at least a dollar, at least a dinner for the work that he does, and then it would be okay. Pile bottle is when you don't make up in advance. There you need to pay, but if you make up in advance, we paskin that a dinner itself is enough. Now this is a real iska. What about a heter iska? When banks or people who are lending money generally do not want to suffer half the loss if on the downside. And on the flip side as well, when a person borrows money from a bank or from a money lender or whatever it may be, he generally does not want to share half of the profits. So what can we do that gives the lender more security and protects the and also gives them only basically a fixed rate of return instead of half the profits and half the losses? So let's take it piece by piece. The fact that the borrower only wants to pay 8% on his money, doesn't want to give away half the profits, that's not a problem. There's nothing wrong with creating a partnership where I tell the investor we're going to be 50-50 partners, but your upside is capped. Anything above 8%, I'm going to keep. So if we want to enter an arrangement where on the downside we're 50-50, the upside we're 50-50, but the investor has a cap, that, push it, you can do that. That's not a shayla in hilchos ribbis whatsoever. The more complex question is, how do we protect the investor's principal? Now, if we protect it in a way where he's completely guaranteed, we're going to be back to Tzayin Barzo. It's going to be awesome. So what kind of protections can we put in where the investor will probably get the principal back, but it will not become Tzayin Barzo, will not be considered guaranteed, it will still be mutter. So over here, there are two basic approaches. The first approach, which is already from Tosfos, is that let's say you have a partnership with someone. You have a partnership and you decide you're going to invest in real estate. Now you know your partner has a tendency to play the stock market. So you tell him, I'm giving you the money to invest in real estate. This investment is 50-50. I'm going to take half the losses, but only if you follow instructions. If you take this money and divert it because you want to play the market, then you have all the liability for anything that happens. Taisa says, that's fine. Because the investment is 50-50. If the borrower or the recipient chooses to divert it and disregard your instructions and do something else with it, so then he's responsible for anything that happens. So Zuck Taisis and brought down the halacha. You can give the money for an investment and you can place severe restrictions on what he can do with the money. And chances are the recipient is not going to listen to all those restrictions. He wants to buy and sell, do business normally. But if he does, although at that point he will be liable for what happens, there's no problem of ripus, because you gave it as a legitimate investment. If he follows instructions, the losses will be split 50-50. If he chooses to ignore your instructions and take other risks with the money, so he's responsible for anything that may happen, and this is the Eitzah of Tosfos. Now, today, most heteriskos do not use this Eitzah. What they do, most heteriskos today are based on a Trumas Hadeshen, which has another suggestion. What happens if we have a regular partnership? Regular investment. You have a wonderful idea. You come to me for funding. I give you $100,000, 50-50 partners. A year later, come back, call you up. Okay, what happened with this investment? You had a beautiful business plan. How are you going to be raking it in? How well you're going to do? Can I have my dividend check? So you say, I'm sorry. Things didn't work out the way I expected. The money is all gone. What's the halacha? So in a regular partnership, if the money was really lost, so I'm going to have to, I have no claim against it. It's chatzim over chatzim because then you have to give me back half the money, that's it. On the other hand, do I have to take your word for it? If a partner just says, by the way, I'm very sorry, the money is all gone, does his partner just have to roll over and say, okay, no problem, just give me a check for half the money? No. He had every right to bring a partner to Bezdin. You can certainly be ma'ishbiya him, make a shvuas hashotvim that Hitaka lost the money. And Zakat Chumas Hadeshen, you could, if you want to protect yourself, if you're investing with someone who you don't trust, there's nothing wrong with writing in the operating agreement that I don't trust you. If you're going to claim there was a loss, you have to bring two Eidim Ksherim, two witnesses that can verify that the money was really lost. Because I don't trust you. Zakat Chumas Hadeshen, he's Moisef. Not only can you say I want Eidim, he says you can require a specific Eidim. I want the Shliach, I want the Chazan and the Rav. They're the only two people I'm going to trust. So if you want to claim there's a loss, I'm not going to believe you unless you can produce these two people that can testify exactly what happened. Dr. Truman Sadeshin, in such a case, since if he provides the witnesses that there was a loss, the losses will be divided 50-50. And since the recipient, the manager, the borrower, has the ability to do so, if he chooses not to, that's his decision, and there will be no issa ribbis. Now, the Taz does say that this idea of requiring specific witnesses is only okay when those witnesses were people who were somewhat involved in the business and could know. Today, if you make a condition that the Rav and the Chazan know, have to testify what happened to your business, he says that's not possible, and therefore would be ribbis. But as long as you accept any two kosher witnesses, he says it's not ribbis. A partner has the right to demand, if you want to claim a loss, you're going to have to prove it. Since the borrower could, if he wants to, have witnesses watching what's going on, he could produce the witnesses. If he chooses not to, that's his decision, and there's no issa ribbis. Now, today, in a typical heteriska, that is how the lender, if you will, we'll call him lender and borrower, but it's really investor and manager. The way the lender is protected, the bottom line halacha is, if you give money with an iska, and the borrower, the recipient, can prove he invested the money and he lost it, he only has to give back half the money. It's a partnership, it's 50-50. But the Heter Iska says, we're not going to take your word for it. You have to produce two kosher witnesses that can testify, can verify there really was a loss. If the borrower does that, the lender will lose half the money. That's a risk that is there with every Heter Iska, and it's a risk that the lender has to know about and be ready to accept. But in practically speaking, it is extremely difficult to find two Eidim that are kosher, they're not related to you, they're not negeh b'davar. So in practical terms, it basically never happens. But it's a risk that is always there, and it's a risk that you cannot do away with.
I would think that it would be relatively easy today, to find kosher witnesses if there are forensic accountants. For instance, you know, if the deal is material enough, so the manager, as we're calling him, really does have an out.
He certainly does. And if you eliminate that out, you're back to an issa ribbis.
Yeah.
So it is true. It has never happened. I mean, I've done a few billion dollars of iskas, and I've never seen anyone produce witnesses. But it's a risk that's there. As I say, you know, past performance does not guarantee future results. It's a risk that is there, and it's a risk that has to be there. One of the big, you know, challenges when you're dealing with the heteriska is, especially when you're dealing with someone who's not from. So on one hand, you want to get him to sign the document. On the other hand, he has to know there's a level of risk, and even though it hasn't happened, it could happen. Someone could bring witnesses, and you have to be ready, and you have to understand you are having a certain level of risk. I once actually dealt with a case. It was about a $5.5 million ISCA, and the borrower actually went bankrupt and called up the lender and said that I just spoke to my Rav, and because the business went bankrupt, I don't owe you the money back. I owe you $2.75 million, and that's it. So the borrower, the lender called up, up frantic, how could he do that, a rush? And I said, do you believe him? He lost the money. And the answer was yes. I said, so then what's your claim? This is a partnership. If you buy stocks, if you buy a stock and the stock goes bankrupt, you lose your money. An ISCA is not debt, it's equity. It's a partnership and it's a certain level of risk. Now again, in the reality, even in this case as well, the borrower claimed he lost money, but he wasn't able to prove conclusively what really happened. There actually probably was some level of fraud going on with the borrower. So he ended up having to pay because he could not prove, certainly couldn't prove, bring witnesses. And it's, again, it's extreme. I've never actually seen someone successfully do it, but it's a risk that is always there. In a case where he knows for sure that there was a hefsid, so there's an Igros Moish that deals with a fascinating case. And actually, instead of the Igros Moish, I'll tell you an actually Maisa Shahaya. The one case that I know of with really ran into problems with the Heteriska is there was someone had a margin account with an Israeli bank. Now, Israeli banks are all Jewish, so they had a Heteriska. Now, Heteriska means that whenever you borrow money from them, you're not really borrowing, it's an investment in their partners. Now, normally, when you borrow from a bank, you buy a house, you invest it, the bank has no idea what's happening. So at the end of the term, they say either bring witnesses or you have to pay. Here, it was a margin account, which means that the money that the bank gave was kept in a margin account held by the bank, and he instructed the bank what stocks to buy and what to sell. Now, every month, he got a statement from the bank saying what happened. Now, there was a margin call because the stocks went down in value. The bank says, we lent you the money, it went down in value, pay us back. The borrower said, wait a second, you didn't lend me anything. You gave me an ISCA, it was a partnership. Now, what's your claim? You don't trust me. You want me to bring witnesses what happened. Guess what? I have the statement that you sent me. So you sent me a statement testifying that this account went down in value. So you can't tell me you don't trust me, I need witnesses. You're the one that's saying that there's a loss. So he claimed, and he was right, that he doesn't have to pay. You can't demand witnesses when the lender has firsthand knowledge of what happened. In this particular case, he was true al pi halacha, but the bank went to court and said, this heteriska is just a kameya, we didn't really mean it, it's just a religious document, and therefore you've got to pay. Now, the Israeli Supreme Court is not necessarily known for its love of Haredi Jewry. They sided with the bank. And they said, such a heteriska, the bank never meant it, you have to pay up. So, the bank went ahead and started foreclosing. But that month, the entire Meir Sharon Bnei Brak defaulted on their mortgages. Because they said, we borrowed money with an ISCA because you told us it's an ISCA. You're now telling us you never meant it. You're now telling us that no matter what, you're going to collect it and it's not an ISCA, it's a loan. We can't pay you anymore. So eventually the bank made a cheshbon, even though they're Israelis, to go ahead and to fight over the measly $25,000 of this one account. It was more kedai to give in on it, and going forward, they changed the heteriska, which we'll get to next week, what they did to avoid this problem. But the bottom line is, when the investor has first-hand knowledge what happened, he can't collect it. And therefore, when you have, the Igros Moshe points out, two partners cannot write a regular heteriska. If their money is going into the business, and they're both partners in the business, they're both managing the business, they each know what happens, whether the business is doing well or not. They can't demand testimony, witnesses, or aides from the other party. They have direct knowledge of what's happening. In such a case, you cannot write a regular heteriska. again, we'll, next week we'll get to what you could do to work around this problem.
How does it answer the question? Let's say I'm a lender, and I lend money, and the guy tells me, and he tells me, I lost the money. I'm telling you I lost the money.
If you believe him 100%, honest, knowing someone's honest and knowing 100% are not the same. If you truly believe there was a hefsid, you have no business taking this money. Now, if you go to Bezdin and say, I want proof. So Bezdin sees a document. The document says you need witnesses. You're going to win in Bezdin. But if you know you have no suffix, if you have no suffix whatsoever, if you have no suffix, then you have no right to take the money. 98% is not a vada.
Why can't you get around this
with
say, I'm pretty green that said I am an investor for 1% of losses and 99% of the
No, because that itself would be a problem. Because the ISKA is 50, you have to have 50-50. For you to get a big whatever chelik of the losses you have of the losses and profits have to be balanced out. We'll get to a shutfis where there are two people investing money. We'll get to the shach. We'll get to that next week. But in general, you cannot be taking a bigger portion of the profits than of the losses. They have to be, the investor at least, you can do it the other way around, but the investor has to be the same. If he's taking a bigger, if the recipient is responsible for 99% of the losses, that means 99% of it is a loan. Only 1% is a pikadon. If only 1% is a pikadon, you cannot get more than 1% of the profits. Because anything else is being generated by his loan, that would be usur. Again, when it's a partnership, that's the shach, we'll deal with it, we'll deal with next week.
So in a case where you're going to you just said I'm gonna get 2% of the profits. You don't have to do 50-50, just say.
Correct. If you want to make up that you're only your downside and upside is both 2%, that's fine. But you can't confuse the 2% does not mean return on your money. It's like this. You can say that I get 2% of the loss and 2% of the profit. But that doesn't mean a 2% return on your money. It means if you invest $100,000 and it makes $1,000, you're only going to earn $20. Because that's 2% of the profit of the business. So it's not percentage on your money, it's profit of the business, which very often will not be very much. Right.
So over here, it's basically the same kind of situation. I mean, the likelihood of invoking the actual teeth of the Zatiska, virtually.
Correct. So it's very clear that Truma Sadeshen, that is the one that first brings it up, he says it's Karoiv Levadai that this will never happen. The Chassam Sofer, it's very clear in the Truvos that they understood good and well that this would virtually never happen. But since it is a partnership, and since this risk always exists, if he produces witnesses, you're going to suffer a loss. And there's nothing really stopping him from doing it. That itself, that's the chiddush, that it's motor. But that is why it's motor. But it's clear from the achrayim, they understood that this is not going to happen very frequently. But still, since it is a partnership, it has a level of risk, therefore it's going to be motor.
So it's
like this. It is a level of harama, similar to when you sell your chametz, you don't really mean it's a harama. So it's a case where the deal is structured as such, where technically it's mutter, but it's a harama to get around things. It's like this. If once a person wants to know la halacha is a mutter or aser, so if you open up any sefer in Hilchos Ribbis, any shalat, you're going to find the heteriska there. It's something which wasn't made up yesterday. It was made up by the Sma and again different types. It was created by Gedolei HaPoskim, and therefore if a person wants to know mutter or aser, certainly it's going to be mutter today. That's the minhag in Klal Yisrael. If a person doesn't want to do a heteriska, it's not a chumra. You know, it's certainly a nice chumra. It's certainly a level of harama. But to go ahead and to say that people are doing shalei kedin, I don't think you can say that because it's something which was created by the Gedolei HaPoskim. And a scabble in Klal Yisrael.
If for instance, the hefiska doesn't work, for whatever reason, is it really susa? In other words, if it fails, there's some defect in the way it's written, whatever.
It depends what the defect is. Normally, we'll get to, we haven't yet discussed the profit side, but usually the profits are not guaranteed either. If the profits are not guaranteed either, then it, by definition, can only be a ribus d'rabbanan. But again, it depends on the failure. We'll get to next week some of the different cases and some of the other parameters, and we'll get back to that a little bit more clearly.